This podcast is brought to you by Voice of Vets. Voice of Vets. Hear it. Feel 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 it.
Joining us at this time, we are delighted to welcome Ms. Itumeleng Mukhine onto the show. She is a tax specialist from Liberty Group South Africa. Itumeleng, welcome to the COVID report. Thank you so much for joining us at this time. SARS has always prioritized raising awareness about the October 2020 deadline for people who needed to file an income tax return at the SARS branch. Can you take us through why it is so important for SARS to issue notices for tax returns?
Thank you, Gabe, and thank you for having me on the show. And hello to your listeners as well. So I think, you know, it's very important for SARS to issue these notices. So if you speak to enough people, you realize just how little knowledge they have about the obligation to file their tax returns, or if they have the obligation to even file this tax return and tax in general. So it's very important for SARS to sort of communicate to the people in whatever medium there is out there. And I think COVID-19 has shed so much light as to how little people actually know about the obligation to file tax returns. And because of the pandemic and the loss of funds, it has become even more important for SARS to collect revenue. So it's very, very important. These notices are very important, letting those who need to file tax returns know that they actually have the obligation, and coming up with simplified ways to alert people, more efficient ways to let people know that they do actually have an obligation. So I think the notices have really, really, really gone a long way. I think we have more people actually talking about SARS and their obligation towards SARS.
Indeed. And you've just touched on it now, that there are certain people who, for whatever reason, just aren't aware of their obligations to the tax man. Can you take us through who the people are who are supposed to have submitted their taxes by this point?
So the following people are actually liable to file a tax return. So if you earn more than 79,000 and you are younger than 65, right? The tax threshold is 79,000 if you are younger than 65. And if you are older than 65, the tax threshold is 122,300. And for citizens who are older than 75, it's 136,750. So just to clarify, and I think it's easier when you tell people who is not liable to file a tax return. So if your total employment income for the year is less than 500,000 and you only receive salary income, so from one employer, and you don't have like a car allowance, you don't drive a company car, you don't have a travel allowance or any other income from any other place, so you don't have a rental property somewhere, and you're not claiming any tax-related deductions, so you just earn a salary and it's less than 500,000 a year, then you have no obligation to file your tax return. But if you do not meet this criteria, then you know for sure you have to file a tax return. So if you have a medical aid, for instance, so say maybe you earn less than 500,000, but you have a medical aid. So there are certain deductions or rebates that you can get in relation to your medical expenses. So you know for sure you actually do need to file your tax return. So that criteria is, so you just measure yourself against that criteria. And this information is available on the SARS website. So it's very easily available. So if you don't meet the criteria for those who are not supposed to file, then you know you have an obligation to file.
Clarity. I love that. Now, again, this is something we touched on, but I'd love to dive deeper in your analysis of this. Based on your own observations and everything that's unfolded since COVID-19 took off here in South Africa, we crow on regularly here on the show about how unprecedented these times were and these circumstances were, how no one was prepared for them. And we also make regular note of how the pandemic and the way it's unfolded has exposed the inequalities and the inadequacies in certain sectors of all of the components that make up life as a South African. When it comes to SARS and the mechanisms that are used to take tax payments from South Africans. In your professional opinion and your professional observation, do you think the systems in place that SARS have are sufficient?
You know, Game, over the years, Nia, SARS has made significant strides in improving revenue collection. And I think the other great thing that has happened in 2020 was that they have come up with a way of making filing your tax return seem less like an administrative burden, well, as far as they possibly can. And I think with the introduction, I think for me, with the introduction of the Mobi app, I was just like, finally, you know, and you talk to a lot of people and they'll tell you, I haven't filed my return because I really don't want to stand in a long queue the entire day at SARS. So the Mobi app has really, really made it a little more convenient for you to file your tax return or to declare your income to them. And e-filing as well. E-filing has literally changed our lives. For me as a tax professional, I value e-filing with everything I have. And there's now an option on e-filing that is called Help You E-File, where you can actually chat to a bot if you're struggling on e-filing, if you have questions about maybe the tax code that you need to put on your tax return, that is there. And it's very quick. The response rate is so quick. And then, yeah, if you still like the very old way of doing things, you can still go into a branch. So, and I think with things like, you know, making EFT payments online, and I know they have pay your bills for Standard Bank, even actually paying your taxes is so much easier. So I think, you know, they're trying, they're really, really trying. And I think for now, it's proven to be sufficient. I think it has really proven to be sufficient.
Now, you bring up a very good point, not just in your previous answer, but in various bits of every other answer that you've given me over the course of this discussion. This idea of filing taxes early. Can you take me through the benefits of submitting and filing early? What are the penalties for filing late? And who carries those penalties?
So the question regarding filing early is a bit of a tricky one. I think for me, the biggest benefit for filing early is getting it out of the way. So it's not like, you know, there's an award or there's compensation for filing early, but there definitely are penalties for you filing late. So if you do file your tax return late, there was an administrative penalty that was introduced recently, where if you file your return late, so for every month that your return is outstanding, they charge you with a penalty. And this penalty is literally charged on individuals, on companies, on trusts, everyone who does not meet the filing deadline. So it's very important for you to file as soon as possible. So the penalty can range from 250 rands to about 16,000 rands for every month that your tax return has not been submitted. So, and that can go up to a maximum of 35 months. So for me, especially if you're an individual, I don't have 250 rands just lying around for me to pay to SARS additionally to the tax that I need to pay. So I think that's the biggest incentive to filing early. So you don't have to pay this penalty. I mean, just file it and get it out of the way. It's done. Because once it's submitted, you know, it's done. You don't have to see it again until the following year.
And what happens if you don't meet the deadline to file your taxes? Where would you get any sort of grace period if there's one to be provided? And what is the period of grace in that instance?
There is actually no grace period for the submission of your tax return. I think 2020 was just a special year because of the pandemic. The date was moved down for filing your tax return. But generally, as a general rule, there really is no grace period. Once the date has been set, that is the date. And it's always in our faces, you know. You listen to the radio, everyone's talking about the SARS submission deadline. You on TV and they're talking about the SARS submission deadline. Because once it's made, any day after that particular date, you run the risk of paying the administrative penalty on late submission. So there is no grace period.
More clarity being provided. I absolutely love this. Now, Idumeleng, my next question for you is a two-hander. It's latching on to the most recent address by Finance Minister Tito Mboweni, in which he outlined the financial outlook for South Africa as our country's economy continues its slow but steady recovery from the perils of the COVID-19 pandemic. The issue of tax came in and about over the course of his address, and it's been received in very polarizing fashion. And there seems to be a degree of confusion as far as what part or what role tax will play in this stage of the economy's recovery from this pandemic. So this two-hander question goes as follows. Number one, has SARS provided for any additional reprieves for taxpayers since the initial ones announced during lockdown level five? And for the consumers who listen to Minister Tito Mboweni's speech and perhaps still have concerns about how everything he outlined in that speech might affect their pocket and might affect the amount of money they pay to the taxman in the form of tax, how much space do regular South Africans like you, like myself, like you, and many of those listening to us right now, how much space is there for us to be concerned and to be wary of what's to come?
Game, you know, I think even for myself, after listening to that speech, I literally had a, like, do we need to brace ourselves question, you know, because there were a lot of reprieves given to taxpayers when the initial lockdown was announced. You know, there were provisional tax payments where you could defer your provisional tax payments, PAY payments, UIF, you could claim from your UIF. And I think the biggest concern for all of us, I think even for myself, is, okay, how are we going to make up the revenue loss? You know, how much was lost? And Tito Mboweni sort of alluded to tax increases, sort of increasing our tax base. And now you're wondering, you know, even the people that I mentioned earlier that are not liable to pay, to file their tax returns, will they now fall within a higher tax bracket? Are we looking at increased percentages for companies, like an increased tax rate, or for individuals? Are we looking at the introduction of new taxes? Because, I mean, recently SARS introduced a new tax, carbon tax, they introduced the sugar tax. And you know what? I think if you are concerned, there is reasonable grounds for sort of concern. But I don't think we should panic. So I think we all need to brace ourselves a little bit and start sort of adjusting our lives a little bit, we're going to feel a little bit of a pinch, but I don't think we're all going to suffer drastically because of the changes the minister will announce. But I do think that it's going to be a tough year for all of us. You know, I think, I think we should all just brace ourselves, I don't think it's a cause for panic. We should not be panicking, but we should really be bracing ourselves.
Indeed. Now, Itumeleng, at the very beginning of the lockdown, one of the, or should I say, maybe just one of the more contentious parts of the lockdown was the ban on alcohol and cigarette sales. And from what I remember of the observations I made of that entire discussion during the early parts of our lockdown, many of the bodies that campaigned and lobbied for the bans on cigarettes and alcohol to be lifted were that the amount of tax that was generated from the sales of things like cigarettes and alcohol was far too sizable and far too valuable for the ban to be lifted up for as long as it was. Can you take me through looking at the clients that you service, can you take me through how tax collection has increased or recovered on tax types since the sale of cigarettes and alcohol was lifted and with borders now being open? And furthermore, could you take me through the exact extent of the danger that was posed versus the alleged exaggerated nature of the extent of the damage that the absence of cigarettes and alcohol sales would have done to the tax collection?
You know, I think, so for me to give the exact extent as to the damage, I think only the revenue authorities can tell us exactly how much of an impact the banning of the sale of alcohol and cigarette actually was. But I think the economy did take a knock. Tax collection did really take a massive loss, because if you look at every budget speech, sin taxes, we are all just sitting there waiting to see just how much we are going to be punished for cigarettes and alcohol, you know. And this affects, it not only affects just your income tax or the company selling these products, it impacts your excise duties, it impacts customs duties, it impacts VAT. You know, so it probably did make a sizable damage to the pockets of SARS. But you know, these are two very, like, this is a major player in our economy, and I think the impact really was felt. And you know, ever since the lifting of the ban, the economy is sort of recovering. You know, I mean, and banning alcohol, for instance, you're banning one of a big revenue stream for restaurants. You're banning a big revenue stream for bars in general, you know. So I think, and you know, this restaurant now, that means the income tax that we are going to collect from this restaurant is much lower. The VAT that we're collecting is much lower. So I don't think it was exaggerated. I wouldn't say it was really exaggerated, but when you look at it holistically, you realize just what a big impact the banning of these products really had on our economy. And like we said earlier, you can't help but wonder how we're going to recover these things. Because, I mean, a loss of tax for 5 months is, that is collected on a monthly basis. And you're thinking, if we didn't collect this much money for a period of 5 months, how are we actually going to make it up? And I think, you know, consumers as well, we're coming to the party, we're going out to these bars now, we're going to restaurants. So I don't know. I think it is increasing. The collection is increasing, and it should start picking up and going back to normal soon. So, yeah.
Now, Itumeleng, in your expert opinion, and I don't mean to put you on the spot in any way, but could you take us through, in your observations, what are the key drivers to the success of tax reform in a developing country like South Africa?
You know, again, tax reform isn't exactly the easiest thing to implement for any country, you know, let alone a developing country, mostly because of the political and the socioeconomic challenges that our country is faced with. But I've always been a firm believer in that a country or a nation that inspires confidence in its people is a country that can convince people to comply and declare taxes voluntarily. So, by confidence, I just generally mean confidence in the sense that where you collect revenue for me, you know, as a citizen and someone who's paying a large portion of my salary, especially if I'm an individual, you know, individuals pay up to like 45% of their income to the revenue authorities. I think I need to see the corresponding increase in government expenditure, especially in like the social needs such as education and healthcare. So I think, you know, tax reform is we could sit here all day and talk about tax reform. But I think for me, the biggest driver is just that, you know, pushing the voluntary compliance by showing and showing your citizens that, you know, what we collect, we give back to the community. So it doesn't feel like wasteful expenditure on my part. You know, it doesn't feel like so much a burden, but also just giving back to the communities that we come from. And this can only be done by the government. And I think corruption, you know, corruption and greed sort of just dampen that for us. But I think in terms of where tax reform is concerned, we really, like South Africa as a whole or as a nation, we really have a long way to go. And just inspiring this confidence in our citizens, you know, it can go a long way. It really, really can go a long way.
Now, towards the end of March, SARS reported a revenue shortfall of more than 66 billion rand. Furthermore, the government is projecting tax increases of 5 billion rand for the next financial year. What would a worsening revenue shortfall mean for South Africa and its citizens?
I think the biggest impact right now would be on, you know, your individual taxpayers. I think we've already sort of been feeling the pinch because of the recession. But yeah, I think that would be like a horrible blow to, you know, individual taxpayers, because I mean, 5 billion is a massive amount to try and make up. So like I said initially, I think we might be seeing, you know, the introduction of new taxes. You know, the revenue authorities have to be really creative, but also being mindful of, you know, where it is that they're sourcing these funds from, because, you know, individual taxpayers are actually the biggest contributor to SARS revenue, and we're already taking so much. I'm not sure they can, or if they will be able to take any more than they are right now. And like I said before, I think we all just need to brace ourselves, because the revenue authorities need to be creative in collecting these revenues without jeopardizing, you know, the investment in South Africa, and without completely wiping out the working class because of excessive tax hikes. You know, 5 billion is really, really, really a lot, and we need to collect. We need to collect because our government does need revenue. We do need the funds, you know. And as much as, you know, there's always like a negative outlook on how these funds are expanded, I think, you know, for social grants and where they are used positively, we still need those funds. It's just where to source them, who to tax higher. Like, are we taxing companies higher? Can we even afford an increase in the VAT rate again? We really all don't know, but I do think that, you know, South Africans are really going to feel a bit of a pinch. And like I said, we just need to brace ourselves.
Brace ourselves indeed. Now, we've spent the majority of our discussion talking about the working class, making direct reference to those in the workforce. What are those on the fringes of the working class? I'm referring in particular to students and interns. Are there any tax breaks that they can take advantage of? And is there anything important for them to note with how they navigate the issue of paying tax, being that they're on the fringes of the work environment?
I think, you know, Game, if I could, I'd literally just go back to being a student, just because I don't have, like, you don't have to pay for taxes. I think the benefits, that tax benefits, are essentially given to people who are liable for tax, you know. So if you are a student, you don't have, like, you're not running any type of business, you're not running an enterprise in any way, you're just a student, you're sort of safe from the hands or the claws of the taxman. So there's no break that is provided to someone who does not have an obligation to file a tax return or to pay taxes. So for interns, I think the benefit is that, you know, interns generally do not get paid a really, really high salary. You know, you're just starting out in your career, you're learning the ropes, and you're building, you know, a rapport for yourself. Your salary isn't exactly that much. So I remember when I was a trainee, I literally almost pay that amount in taxes now. So for those guys, it's the benefit for them is that, you know, they're below the tax bracket, and they don't have to pay taxes, you know. So, and if you are paying taxes, so for pay as you earn, for instance, your company will probably be paying pay as you earn for you. Some people, I remember in my first year of work, I got a refund from SARS because I had paid more taxes than I had to because I was below the tax threshold. So for students, unfortunately, there's no break for you because you're not liable for tax because you do not fall within the tax bracket. So if you don't have an income, you're not earning an income that is above the tax threshold, then you're okay. You're safe.
And as a final token of clarity, for those listening right now who might still be a little bit wet behind the ears as it pertains to matters of taxing, and as we
as we continue to venture forth towards recovering from the perils of this pandemic and everything that it's placed, all the pressure that it's heaped on our country's economy. For those who are still unclear on what happens when their taxes are either exempted, credited, or deducted, can we break down the difference between these three, an exemption, credit, and deduction as it pertains to tax?
Okay, so an exemption is totally, it's almost as if removing something from tax as a whole. So what happens with an exemption is that we'll say there's a concept called gross income in tax. So gross would be the total of something before you deduct anything from it. So gross income would have you say, okay, this is my total income. This is all that I get. And then there would be transactions or certain types of incomes that are exempt from tax. So SARS says we will not tax this particular type of income. So for companies, for instance, dividends. So if a local South African company earns dividends, SARS will say, okay, no, we do not tax the dividends. So something that is completely taken out of the tax framework. So we say, okay, we acknowledge that it is income, but we do not tax this type of income or transaction. So it is tax-free. Right. So a tax credit is sort of a benefit that is given to reduce your tax. So what happens is you'll get your income. Maybe you'll have a couple of expenses. You'll be allowed to calculate how much you owe, maybe whatever tax bracket you fall under. And then SARS will say from that tax that you are liable for, we'll give you a tax credit. For instance, like your medical tax credit is used to reduce your tax liability. So you calculate your amount of tax and then you say, okay, my medical tax credit is this much, so I can reduce what I owe to SARS by that medical tax credit. So a tax credit reduces your tax liability. And then a tax deduction would be used to reduce your taxable income. So taxable income would be, as I described, gross income, your total income, less any expenses that you are allowed to deduct for tax purposes. The net of those two would give you your taxable income. So a deduction would essentially be those expenses. So anything that is used to reduce your income and it is allowed by SARS is a deduction. So it reduces the amount on which your tax is calculated, your tax liability is calculated. I don't know if that provides a bit more clarity.
Well, it certainly works for me, and it segues very neatly into my final question for you at this time. We have seen our Commander-in-Chief, the President Cyril Ramaphosa, looking into the state of technology in South Africa and possible tax changes to better help the country prepare for the coming fourth industrial revolution. Do you think the government should also look into developing tax policies that can better account for operations of digital and virtual companies? What will this say on our country's readiness to fully embrace the digital way of living life, conducting business, and conducting life as we know it, partly shaped by the lasting impact of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, you know, Game, I think, like I said before, the one benefit of, you know, the pandemic was showing us that we are a digitally ready country. You know, we can, you know, we are technologically savvy. We can come up with new ways of working where we literally do not need an office, or we don't need an office space. So if I need to do work, I literally have to have a computer. And I think SARS is coming to the party, you know, with the introduction now of taxation on electronic services for VAT purposes. You know, I think SARS really, really is coming to the party. Our government is transforming. And I think you realize with the fourth industrial revolution that the world is changing. You know, the world is rapidly, rapidly changing. And I think, you know, our revenue authorities and treasury and all these policymakers are sort of coming to the party in that regard, you know. And I think in a few years, even, like, you know, we should be seeing policies that are specifically designed to deal with the digital economy and to accommodate the surge in technology. So I think, you know, we're well on our way there. We have the skills, we have the talent in South Africa. We just need to literally tap into it. And I think our policymakers really are doing that. And I think, you know, in the face of COVID-19, we have proven to be ready. You know, we are ready. I don't think we can all sit around a fire and say, no, we're still living in the dinosaur ages. I think South Africa is well on its way. And, you know, our policymakers are also, they're realizing this and they're coming up with, you know, transformed ways of collecting taxes and adapting to the digital economy and the digital world. So I definitely think that they are preparing for it, and we should be seeing a lot of change in that regard. And it won't be a shock, because we're all, like, everything else in our world is sort of changing in that direction. So I think, you know, the revenue authorities in our government really are making strides in that regard.
That concludes our show-spanning, insightful conversation here on the COVID Report. We have just been joined by Ms. Itumeleng Mokine, a tax specialist from Liberty Group South Africa, talking us through the ways in which paying tax during the heights of this pandemic might not nearly be the daunting experience everyone imagines it to be.
This podcast was brought to you by Voice of Vids. By Voice of Vids. To hear more of our shows, tune in to 88.1 or stream via www.vofm.co.za.